You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hey marketers, want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and today I'm talking to Stuart Francis, an incredible comedian from Canada. Based in the UK. And this is a really unusual episode. What is it about Canadians? You remember a couple of years ago, the Tony Law one surprised us all with how that one turned out, which it did turn into a fascinating episode. And I think this is the same. Stuart is not really interested in being interviewed, and is certainly not interested in explaining how he writes his jokes. He makes a very good case, intentionally or otherwise, for the... He says that he is... I don't know how to introduce this one, guys. Stuart says that he is not desperate to perform, but he's absolutely desperate to perform. That's my analysis of it. It's very interesting, I think, hearing someone protest about how they don't need to be a performer. They're just doing it because the audience deserve a performance. But at the same time, absolutely being unable to rest without gagging and riffing and being very, very funny. Stuart's a lovely man. This is a very funny episode. You will hear us wrestle with one another. We're grappling. It's a grappling episode. And I hope you enjoy it. This is the wonderful comedian and utterly frustrating, maddening podcast guest, Stuart Francis.
So funny.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Stuart.
You were saying before, this is only your second podcast.
Second ever.
After Daniel Sloss's show.
Yeah.
He's coming on this show in a couple of nights. Did you glean anything about him from the podcast with him?
I gleaned him like it was nobody's business. It was wonderful. He was lovely. Great kisser.
Is it?
Oh, my goodness. Like a really good kisser.
He's a charming little sexy guy. You guys
probably know
Daniel Sloss.
Awesome.
Joel Dommett is coming up on the show in a couple of nights. And... I thought Daniel would give Joel a run for his money in the kind of smouldering guest stakes. But so far, when people leave the show, all the attractive young ladies are going, "What night is Joel on?" Again.
Oh, so,
true story.
That's not going to happen tonight, is it?
Oh, awkward. Wow. Not even a sympathy vote. That's
not even a sympathy.
Outrageous.
Wow. In my day, I was hot. But yeah, those days are gone.
I read now, this. My instincts are already like, tell me about how the days are gone.
The days when I was hot. Oh, my goodness.
Let's start with your...
Never left the house.
Let's start with your show this festival.
Stared at myself in the mirror. What? Sorry?
Let's start with your show this festival.
Let's start with my show.
You are technically eligible for newcomer, are you not?
Yes.
Did you know this? In the Comedy Awards this year, Stuart Francis, how long have you been a comedian?
43 years.
It's not 43
years. 43 years tonight. It is. It is tonight.
43 years.
26. Let's go with 26 years.
So you're eligible for newcomer.
Yeah.
Are you technically? Are you not too
yes.
big? Do you know how they work it out?
Yeah, I've shared the bill with two other comedians who shall remain Glenn Wool and Craig Campbell.
Oh, yes. You did the Lumberjacks show.
Yes. So I shared the bill with them three times. And this is my first solo show. So based on that, it's my I'm eligible for best newcomer. So I hope to win the best show. Best newcomer and best joke. So here, fingers
Sweet.
Crossed.
Sweet.
Yeah,
that would be a coup.
Nice. You'll be disappointed if I don't.
You've won best joke before 2012?
Yeah, yeah. I don't like to talk about that. Yeah, 12.
What was the joke?
It wasn't that funny. I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of me, but the joke was, you know who gives kids a bad name? I get
You fucked up the best joke. Great.
That's
take
how
it
much
again.
I hate the joke.
Take it again.
You know who gives kids a really bad name? Poshenbecks.
I mean, that was sort of a...
I love how you guys didn't even fake laughter.
4 out of 10.
Just making the awkward moment even more awkward. That was
weird.
Thoughtful. That was thoughtful.
Those competitions every year, they
go, best
joke of the Fringe. And do you submit jokes to them?
Or no, of course they just not. Come I just do my show and someone... It caught me off guard. I was staring at myself in the mirror and someone came in and said, you won best joke of the Fringe. And we looked at each other, me and myself, and I just said, yeah, well done, us.
How are you enjoying the Fringes here? How are you enjoying the experience of doing your first hour of it?
It's not like a Daniel Sloss kiss, but it's still pretty sweet.
And you're someone who has, I mean, you're touring already as an entity.
Yeah,
like,
I'm awesome.
Why now then? Why bring an hour to the Fringe when you're already an effective touring act? Why now?
Why not? That's what Kennedy was saying. That was my Kennedy. How long is a Kennedy? No, I don't know what how to coin the phrase, but yeah, it's just I live up here. I got a place up here. Why not cash in on this? Can I swear?
You can totally swear.
On this motherfucking great show that I've got. I've comprised, when I stopped staring at myself in the mirror, I wrote some pretty killer gags, and I've taken it to the road. So I'm doing 121 shows on the tour. I'm doing 24 shows here. So why not?
Okay.
Run this into the ground. I'm doing live at the Apollo.
So, okay.
Yeah, and then I'm going to Melbourne and New Zealand. Who will ever, Canada. I'm taking this everywhere, man.
And how are you, where do you...
Have I said I'm awesome?
Yeah, no, we know you're... Oh, I've just remembered the other thing I was going to say, and this might turn out to be crucial. Obviously, I love you,
yeah,
Stuart.
Yeah, thank you.
The thing I was going to say was normally about 20 minutes into this show, the comedian goes, oh, it's okay that no one's laughing, right? Because normally I've said... There's no pressure to be funny and you don't need to
They've
do jokes.
They've been nothing but laughs tonight. So if it's going to get better, pace yourself, folks. This is awesome. Do they know we're in here, by the way?
Who's they?
The black medicine people.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. It seems like a lock-in of some sort.
No, it's entirely legal.
Or a Sean lock-in. Because that's a...
Wow. Now, let's talk about the reaction to your jokes now. And I would ask you to talk seriously about your jokes as well. I know you are a very funny man and it spills out of you.
Yes.
But let's analyze it seriously for a bit.
Yes.
So you get different reactions to the sorts of jokes that you do. You're very much a one-liner comedian.
I get the fact that people think I'm great and other people think I'm fucking great. I get that. So I know that I split audiences that way. But I'm okay with that. I've gotten used to it.
Stuart, calm down.
There is no mention of you touching me.
I'm touching you now.
Fair enough.
You don't need to do your act.
I'd
like to have a real conversation with you.
We are. This is me really. You've never had a real
conversation. I don't know
I'm
you.
I'm always on.
I don't know you enough
always
socially.
Always on.
Are you always on?
Always.
I don't think you are. I think you and I sat next to each other during a Kitson show at the Stand, and we had a really serious, calm conversation for 10 minutes about how your friend
was
going. I don't
like him, do you? And you say, yeah, we remember it.
I would like us to replicate
that. Remember that conversation.
I'm sorry I didn't make that clear before, but I would like us to replicate that.
Let's do it.
We
Come
can
on.
Get your jokes out everywhere. They're on YouTube.
Let's
they're
talk
on the
about
internet.
My parents. Let's do it.
So one of the reactions that you've got for one of your jokes just then was sometimes there's a laugh and one time there was kind of a groan and the guy went, hey, like that.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
that kind of thigh slapping way.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you happy with that? Are you only going for a laugh?
Oh, no, Will I want a bigger laugh. That's why I'm performing it right now. You want a serious conversation,
yes.
But we are performing. We're in front of a group of people. I'm not gonna bore these people with me talking about me. They don't want to hear about me.
Yes, they do. And even if these fuckers don't, I've got 30,000 people online who do. Who are currently, when this goes out, they're going to be sat in their
bullshit.
Car.
30,000.
Yeah, yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, let's start over again. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know these were plugged in. I thought we were just in someone's basement pretending that we're doing a show. Okay, let's do this.
Thank you. So this is the, we're going to be on the clock, and we're going to see how long Stuart can be serious.
Yes.
And every time he...
It's not going to happen. I'm performing.
Stop performing. It's fine.
In front of a group of people.
Yeah, look, these people are not here because it's a comedy show. It's a documentary show about comedy.
They're facing us.
Yeah.
Wait, you have to perform. I'm not going to take up their time by being boring. What am I, a storyteller comedian? No.
Ooh, that's the closest thing we've got to a real opinion.
Ooh. Yeah, I hate them. And I'll tell you why.
Go on.
No.
Yeah, no. <it's... laughs>
That would be a story, but no.
Stuart.
Yes, Stuart.
I mean, it is funny that we're both called Stuart.
Same name. Spell them differently.
It just, like, we can very easily sit here for the remaining 40 minutes and just, and you could do loads of jokes. It'd be really funny. But and sorry,
I'm not going to do that because that's my act. But I'm performing. I'm in front of a group of people and you're 30,000 listeners. But yeah.
Have you ever
28,
been in front of a group of people and not been performing?
No. How dare I do that? Not be entertaining.
But this
me just saying that's bored the shit out of them.
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't, because it's not about getting laughs. It's not about getting laughs. I want to get into your process. This is an investigation.
Do it. Let's do it.
Thanks, man. Tell me about when you started and you're not allowed to be funny. You're not allowed to be funny, and I'll take the hit. And if these people all go, this was a shit, boring show, that's on me. Tell me about when you started.
Did you hear Stuart on were you one of the five listeners on Stuart Goldsmith's podcast last night? Did you hear how boring Stuart Francis was? That's what's going to be.
It's not
really? You
well,
promised
me. 137 episodes in the can, and people care about and they care about learning about you, and they will turn off if you just keep being funny.
Okay, let's do it. What was the question?
Tell me how you started
doing comedy.
I masturbate
3 times a day. What? No, sorry.
I'm setting the clock back. Zero seconds without a joke.
Okay.
I want to find out who you are.
I don't want you to know who I am. They don't
Did you not
know.
Read the email when I invited you to do this show? I mean, you probably didn't.
What's an email? No, I don't know. Fucking hell. I'm new in town. Fuck's sakes.
I don't think I've ever had a guest have
Good.
Such a...
At this rate, you never will.
Such a reaction to the idea of... you know that I'm being quite serious, and I'd like you to calm
I'm
down
being
and be serious.
I can't...
You're not being serious.
I'm in front of a group of people. We owe it to them to be entertaining.
Okay, tell you what then. We'll keep these plugged in. You and I will go and sit in that cupboard, and we'll have the conversation in private.
That'll be better. I prefer that. Let's do that. That's what I came... No. Okay. I'll be serious. Okay, go ahead.
Tell me about how you started.
I used to work in the post office. And
without deliberately being boring for comic effect, tell me the actual story. Imagine we're two humans talking to each other.
I used to work in the post office, and I knew I was very funny, and I didn't want to work in the post office, so I took up stand-up comedy.
Don't clap. Don't fucking clap. Stop colluding with Stuart. Stop colluding. You worked in a post office. How old were you?
19.
Thank you.
Was it so hard?
It wasn't so hard. How did you know you were funny? Were you like this at school? Were you kind of always
on
at school?
Yeah. No, not so much. I watched a lot of television. And then I went home, looked at myself in the mirror, and... I don't know why they're not laughing at that. But no, I always knew I was special. I used to look out the window. This is serious. I'm going to lay down some heavy shit on you guys. I used to look out the window as a 8-year-old kid thinking, what am I going to do with my life? And that saddens me that I would, because I saw the other kids studying and doing whatever you do in school. I didn't pay attention to that. But whatever they're doing, they were bettering themselves. And I wasn't. But I knew I had a gift, Stuart Goldsmith.
You so nearly managed to finish that sentence without being stupid. Come on.
Now I'm being stupid. I've gone from being funny to fucking hell.
I was enjoying that. You're 8 years old. You're looking out the window. Is this true or is this the... I don't know if this is the setup for a joke.
I was 8. Yeah.
8 years old. You're looking out the window.
So unbelievable. Canada, we have windows. I was 8. I looked out. Or oot. Because that's what we say. Apparently we say that a lot. But yeah, I just thought, what the fuck am I going to do with my life?
It worried you when you were 8.
No, why-ish. We get over that. But yeah, so I was raised by television. I always knew I was a bit of a sassy kid. I didn't do it. I was a popular kid too, so I wasn't that creepy kid that had to get laughs to be popular. I was already popular, and then you come in with the cachet of being hilarious. Fucking hell, it was a win-win.
So you were popular at school, and were you a sporty kid as well?
Yeah, very sporty. I was a good athlete. Yeah.
So that's quite.
Want a race?
That is not. Maybe after the show.
Okay, fair enough.
So you were 90. You were working at a post office, thinking, "What am I going to do with my life?"
Yeah.
And what was it that first propelled you to book yourself onto?
But I stayed there for the better part of 10 years, and then a girl I went out with. Her name is Dawn. She's lovely. That was my first girlfriend that I really loved. Signed me up for amateur night, knowing that if I wouldn't do it, I wouldn't have the gumption to do it myself. Okay. Signed me up for amateur night in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Yuck yucks. It was a Thursday.
Okay.
Is that serious?
And who else was on the bill? Do you remember? Do you remember the...
There was a creepy old MC that I used to work with because I then became a comedian. So he remained creepy. He didn't stop being creepy.
Okay.
So he introduced me. But anyway, so I did it. And it was the highest I've ever felt after a performance.
How much writing did you...
As I give a serious answer, you interrupt me. What?
How much writing did you put into that show?
A lot. And practicing. And it's like 5 minutes. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to spritz. And so you're doing a spritz chat to the audience and stuff like that. And one of the first jokes was an off-the-cuff comment. And I got a laugh, and then I went into my scripted stuff, and I've been in my scripted stuff ever since. That's all I do is go on stage, lock and load, and just that's why I need to be funny in front of a group of people. I am one of those comedians that our contract is just to be funny. From the minute I step on stage to the minute I step off stage I owe you that. And how dare I hold, people in this room want to be talking and stuff like that. I've held them captive, so the least I can do is be funny. So that's why I do that.
Why do you think that? To me, is quite unusual. Do you feel that's unusual amongst comedians?
I'm very unusual compared to most comedians. A lot of comedians.
Why do you think?
Here's something heavy. You want some heavy shit? Comedians, to me, are comprised of two types of comedians: those that like to make people laugh and those that need to make people laugh.
Okay.
I'm in the former.
Okay.
I just like to make people laugh. There's other guys that need that validation, need that pat on the back, need that love. I don't need that. Got that? Got in the spade.
So that, to me, that's fascinating because that
I
doesn't
am fascinating.
Seem to...
The more you listen to me, the more fascinated. What are you doing?
That doesn't seem... Heck? It's a... That Weird. Doesn't... I'll put it
Stop
away.
Doing that.
That doesn't seem to tally with the incredibly kind of frenetic first 10 minutes of this interview where you're banging out jokes. I've had to kind of rugby tackle you to the ground and go, calm down. That, to me, seems more... I mean, do you see how to an audience of people, to a casual observer... That seems like a conflict between you going, actually, I don't need to be funny, I'm happy.
No. All I wanted to be was a cartoonist. That's that was plan A, EH, because I'm Canadian. But I had to be funny. I have to be funny.
No, you don't.
If I stop, I'll explode. But I wanted to be a cartoonist. I wanted to be anonymous. I don't want to go on stage. It goes against my personality to go on stage and perform to people. It just so happens I'm very good at it, and it's a way of making a living. But all I wanted to do was draw cartoons, single-frame cartoons, just like my hero, Gary Larson.
Yes.
Put them out there, because that's what
I said. Yeah, huge fan of Gary.
And because that's what I am, one-liner guy. My book, Pun Direction, is now out there with all my jokes and a whole bunch of my cartoons in it. So it's kind of come full circle in that sense. So I'm a published cartoonist, so it came back to what I always wanted to be all along. Yeah. What? Sorry. You seem like you want to ask me another question.
So would you be happier dropping the comedy in future and just doing the cartoons? If you became the new Gary Larson, if people saw that book and was like, this is amazing, probably. These are better than his one-liners, would you go...
Why would they say that? That's hurtful. People can be mean. Why would they say that? I can hear them. Yeah, I would like to do that. This doesn't speak to my personality. I don't need to go in front. I don't need their love. I like the fact that I make people laugh, but I don't need it.
Okay.
Whereas 80% of comedians need that, and that saddens me in some aspect, but it is what it is.
Now that must mean that 80% of people you're with in a dressing room or on the road or on tour with are people who are trying to fulfill that need, and they're often quite desperate. Do you think?
What? Not off stage. On stage, there's an element of that. We're all trying to win favor with the audience. We're doing it for different reasons. My reason is because I like it. I like the structure of a joke. It's a cartoon. It's a verbal cartoon. I'm putting that out there. And it's a way of making a living, traveling the world. Met my beautiful wife as a comedian in Hong Kong. So that was lovely. So it's given me everything. And until tonight, I've really enjoyed it.
So let's talk about the writing of the jokes. Let's talk about the drawing of the cartoons, as it were. So talk us through what's one of your favourite jokes that you're currently doing in your current show here at the Edinburgh Festival?
Well, no, I don't want to give it away. No, I'll think of one. Come back to that.
Oh, okay.
Let's sing our song that we were talking about. Let's do our song that we practice all day.
Think of a smooth. No, no. Fair enough. Think of an existing joke that you don't, that you no longer do. So a joke that was a favorite, a standard, like one of the first jokes that you went, oh, hang on, this always works, like an unbreakable joke from your early career.
I can't go into that brain because that's I'm so locked on the new jokes, because people say, oh, I love that joke that you did. And I genuinely struggle to remember a lot of my old jokes.
Okay.
You know that joke that you do, and they'll butcher it, because, and blessed that that's a joke that resonated with them. But you know that joke, and they'll get to the punchline first, and you do that one. But I have difficulty remembering a lot of my jokes. But
okay,
one of my legacy jokes was my swimming back to shore jokes. Everybody seems to enjoy that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't want to butcher them. Can you just tell it without?
Well, I've given away the punchline, so this might.
Yeah,
not
it's
make
fine.
For,
it's fine. This is we're exploring it. We're not performing.
But just. Well, then I'm going to get into some serious aspect of my life, and I don't want to do that, do I? Do you guys want to hear? But... Yeah. I'll take that as a no. Unanimous no. Swimming back to shore. So my father left when I was very young, and that's good, because I met him later, and that was good that happened. But my jokes were about my father, and everything he did with me involved me swimming back to shore. So I'm not going to do the joke because I've given away the punchline. So it'll kind of but anyway, I met him when I was 35 years old as an adult man, and he continued to be him. And he told me about how when we lived in California, unaware of my act, because it didn't involve him. So he told me, I taught you how to swim when you're 5 years old by throwing you in the water. And I thought, wow, did that happen? Is that how that joke worked into my head? I don't think it did. It was just such a harsh joke that everything I did with my father ended up with me swimming back to shore. So that in itself. So if anybody knows the joke, it's quite, it's a callback, and I keep coming back to it. But I thought that was interesting. So did that work its way into my brain subconsciously? I don't think it did. I think it's just a stark joke. And because I like starkness. I do have a lot of dark jokes. I like that aspect. So that, I think that's how I wrote that joke. But it was interesting that he would say that's what he used to do.
And do your jokes? Do you write them and then they're completed?
Is he here? I mean,
Daddy.
So you can see what's happening here. Stuart is just absolutely unwilling to stop and talk. Do we get there in the end? You'll have to listen on to find out. But I mean, I did enjoy this in a way that was, I don't know, would it have been different if this was not in front of a live audience? I mean, it must have been. Surely it would have been. Would it not? I don't know. I leave this one to you. I'm an enormous fan of Stuart's work, and I urge you to seek him out on tour and online and just devour his stuff. He's a phenomenal joke writer, a really warm and funny and engaging presence on stage, and a lovely man. This particular encounter was fairly mind-blowing. I came out of it exhausted, but I did really enjoy it. And I did, at the time, warmly extend an invitation to Stuart to come on the show again at another time, maybe in a non-live capacity, and see if that makes a difference. Perhaps it will, perhaps it won't. More from Stuart shortly. Just one or two things to point out this time. Thank you, those of you who've been in touch with me regarding my cavalry plan. You're such great guys. Thank you. This is a plan, if you're unaware of it, to help me out. As I'm fond of asking you guys for help, and you tend to respond very warmly, and it's very much appreciated. I'm going on tour, as you know. You can go to comedianscomedian.com and click there's a little news widget down the right-hand side, which will link you to my tour dates. Alternatively, if you're a smart kid, you can go to comedianscomedian.com/tour_2016. And that will give you all of the places that I'm going to be. And be in them, I shall. I'm really excited. I'm doing my show from last year's Edinburgh Fe- from from the Edinburgh Festival just passed. Always impossible to talk about it straight afterwards. It's called An Hour. It got loads of great reviews. I really enjoyed doing it. Lots of you came to see it. I hope you'll come again and bring your friends if I'm anywhere near you. But the cavalry plan is simply that you can email me info@comedianscomedian.com and you can tell me with the subject line cavalry that you'd be willing to have me send you a couple of posters. Chuck me your name and address and I'll send you some posters if you think you can put them up somewhere useful in your place of work, in your local tin mine or or wherever else you work, climbing wall, escape room, wherever you guys are working these days. For some reason, comedians all seem to be working in escape rooms. If you've not already thought of that, that's a top tip because it's a sort of fun... I mean, I bloody love an escape room. If you could send me your recommendations, I've done several of them and I'll do more. Anyway, wherever you work, send me in if you'd like me to send you some posters so that you can help advertise the tour. If you are in any of the towns where I'm going to be on tour, which are, I'll give you the full list here. I'll whip through it in, I'll try and do one per second. Here we go. The Glee Club, Birmingham. Just the Tonic, Nottingham. Outside the Box, Kingston. The Hawth Theatre, Crawley. XS Malarkey, Manchester. The Wardrobe, Bristol. Joker Comedy Club, Southend. The Gulbenkian in Canterbury. West End Centre, Aldershot. Old Town Hall, Hemel Hempstead. The Stables, Milton Keynes. The Ring of Bells at Bath Comedy. The Bicycle Shop, Norwich. Cookie Jar, Leicester. The Cube, Corby. Arena Theatre, Wolverhampton. Soho Theatre, London. From the 21st to the 23rd of April. And The Laughing Coyote at Sutton Theatres. Thank you. If you are in any of those towns or can get to any of those towns, do come along. Please forgive me for not coming up further north. I'm going to have a 6-week-old baby then, all being well. And I've just tried to get a tour that I could go home from every night. This is not how I imagined my first ever tour being, but I'm very thrilled about it to think that I'll be on stage enjoying the show. And I imagine you'll be able to see sort of bits of sick on me and certainly a sort of wild glint in my eye that teeters on the edge of madness. So it should be good. However, I am, as you know, I'm going to do the shows and then I'm going to hang around afterwards just for 10 minutes. We've not checked this with the venue, so we might be doing it in the foyers or the car parks. But I will hang around and do an off-the-record Q&A about the podcast, a little sort of Ask Me Anything type thing. And if you'd like to come along, then you can participate in that and bring your most bewildering questions for me and get to the bottom of what I'm doing and how Stu Goldsmith secretly feels about the podcast. I mean, you know exactly how I feel about it, but come along anyway if there's any burning issues you'd like me to answer. So those are all the venues. Now, someone did email me from the guy's name, I think, is Russ. I've got it written here somewhere. Russ Sauntry. Thanks, man. You're one of the few people who've emailed in and said, yeah, by all means, I'll do the cavalry, do the poster thing. But you understood the email form on my website differently to others. And as a result, you didn't put your proper email in the email send file. So somehow I've got an email from you without knowing how to reply to you. So if you are Russ Sauntry, give me a shout. There are tickets now available for Soho Theatre for Izzy Sutty on the 4th of January and Dave Gorman on the 7th of March. Da, 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 that's the official announcement. And we've got Gorman, very excited about that, and of course very excited about Izzy too. The 4th of January and the 7th of March. I'm still firming up a very exciting offer for the following one in April, but you can go to sohotheatre.com and enter the discount, the secret discount code FAFF, all in capital letters, F-A-F-F, in order to get 25% off your tickets. I think they're on for a tenner, so you get them for £7.50. So fill that up. Those are both going to be great. Izzy Sutty, of course, best known as Dobby from Peep Show. Terrific musical and stand-up comic in her own right. And Dave Gorman, who sort of invented great chunks of what we consider to be the way it's done right now. Absolutely brilliant comic, lovely man, and an incredibly strong stand-up as well. You might know him more for his kind of exploratory and sort of challenge-based shows. But those are, it's very important to say, those are backed up by really, really strong stand-up. He's got a fantastic observational eye. So can't wait to talk to those guys at Soho Theatre coming up in January and then in March. If you're Christmas shopping, you can do it via the Amazon widget that is on comedianscomedian.com/donate. Or you can go there and you can chuck some money at me for the show. And people have been doing that, and I'm always very, very grateful. Thank you. We had a couple of fairly sizable donors come in recently. Someone who I'm going to mispronounce her name probably. It looks like Mary, but with sort of two or three different eyes in there scattered around. Thank you very much to you. And thank you, Luke, as well, for two very sizable donations, which I really appreciate. If anyone else amongst you would like to chuck me £5, £10, £20, £50, £1 million, I think you can do that. You might even break PayPal. Best not try to do that in case, just for the sake of a slightly wry joke, you end up getting some awful. Maybe they'll charge you a percentage if you, it's not in your bank account. I don't know how it works. Don't give me... This is the new the new strategy. Do not donate £1 million to ComCom. It's not worth it. Please, guys, try and just keep it down in the 20s and 50s. So you could do that, of course, at comedianscomedian.com. That's all for now. Thanks to those who have donated. Thank you if you haven't donated, if you haven't been able to or don't want to. Then, of course, you can do the new thing, which is to simply take someone's iPhone off them. If they're not a podcast person, they don't understand. They go, me, podcast, what are they? That was the voice. I was doing the voice for Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Podcast, what are they? Have a Google of Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, but don't watch it in front of any children. You need to take their device from them, open their podcasts app, find the show, subscribe to it, and then start your favourite episode downloading on their phone, and then they'll get to it in good time. That's all for now. Right, are we ready? Let's get back into this. I'm girding my loins and slapping that white resin stuff that acrobats use on my palms. Let's get stuck back into part two of my conversation with Stuart Francis.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Do you write a joke and the joke is completed and then you do it on stage? How much editing is there in between you thinking of a joke, writing a version of it, and then trying that out on stage? Is it always, do you always write the finished article, or is there like a back and forth between them?
No, it's done and dusted. So it's locked and loaded. That's it. Set up punch and go out there and try it out. And the longer I've been doing this, the more confident I become in the material and I can sell it. Cause I used to do a lot of jokes in early days that I didn't probably have the confidence, the stage confidence. They weren't getting a laugh that I would reintroduce when I had the confidence and had that stage confidence and guess what? It got a laugh. So I was right in the first place. I just didn't. It's all about timing. So I hang on to those jokes.
And do you recognize different types of jokes that you have? Like, I know your show at the moment is called Pungent.
Nice.
And it is nice. And there are lots of kind of wordplay type jokes. And then there are jokes which have no element of wordplay, which are just more like the Gary Larson, like a visual picture. Kind of ones. Do you kind of recognize different types? Do you think, oh, that's one of them and that's one of them?
No. But they will fall into those categories, but I don't analyze it that way. Just a good joke, that'll go, that'll fit in there. That works.
And when you structure them, what decisions are you making about if you structure a 7-minute or a tour show?
Yeah.
Are you just literally doing them in the order you think of them or way as to keep misdirecting people?
No, a little bit of that, but to compartmentalize them so I can remember them. So they all have to, they're all in chunks. So that one, oh, that will fit in with that. So,
and what are the things that make them fit in?
Whatever the theme is of that, like I'll be talking about my wife. So I'll do a bunch of jokes about my wife. And then after that, jokes about my children, you know, so it's, and that will trigger that, you know, that joke and that will, so it's the way an actor approaches a script. All my act is in my head. And so if something happens and someone says something, I genuinely have to ask the audience, what was I talking about? Because that's what we say. And to get back on track, because I've been taken off script, I'd be like, Benedict Cumberbatch, who would snap at the audience and probably have to collect himself and go back into being a Ponzi actor.
So what elements of the performance of the jokes do you enjoy most?
Well, the beginning, middle, end, and it followed by a laugh. So it's all about the structure of a joke and just getting a giggle. And I love it, the physicality of seeing an audience, you know, physically moving. My wife loves that. She's not a big fan, but she loves the fact that people will move, and it's motivating, or not motivating. It's causing people to react physically. Which is just
involuntarily as well.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely. I live a charmed life.
Do you feel powerful on stage that you're doing you're making people much. Behave involuntarily?
No. I just want it to happen. I want you guys to laugh. And then I want it to be, you know, bam, 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 bam. Good night. What was that? That was amazing. I want that to happen.
So how long were you doing 20s for? Once you got onto the circuit, once you were working the clubs regularly and getting paid.
Well, in Canada, we do it a little differently because you're not seasoned enough to be a compere or MC, as we call them. So you don't do that. So what you do, you strive to be a middle, and that's 20 minutes. And then right after that, you know, that evolution, you become a headliner, and that's 40, 45 minutes. So you want to get that 45 minutes in the first, you know, 2-3 years or something like that, because that's where the sweet money is.
Okay.
It isn't, but professionally, that's what you aspire to get to, is being a headliner on the Yuck Yuck circuit.
And is
Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks.
Am I right in saying
I almost said just Yuck Yucks. It's supposed to be Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks.
That's part of the branding.
Yeah.
This is a very...
Can you edit it so that I just say Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks?
I can.
I'll never work there again.
If you keep playing ball, I can.
Yeah, yeah.
So am I right in thinking that the Yuck Yucks brand, that I've never... Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
They contract you in such a way that you can only work those comedy clubs. If you're a Yuck Yucks
I've heard that. I didn't play by that, but I think Mark Breslin of Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks saw in me, a talented young man. And I've never been told it, but my understanding is you had to do that circuit for X amount of time without pay, and then you earn the privilege of being paid. I kind of leapfrogged over that because I was doing what's called the Mark Breslin's independent circuit. And no, there was.
I'm sorry.
I was hoping to get at least a giggle. But then I was doing the independent circuit, which isn't affiliated with Mark Breslin. I can't believe I'm saying his name this many times. But then the game plan was always to be a performer on Mark Breslin's Yuck Yuck stage.
Okay.
In Mark Breslin's Toronto. But my first gig was in Mark Breslin's Niagara Falls Yuck Yucks. So that was...
And
that was
when you
Mark
were...
Mark Breslin.
Those are the equivalent of sort of jonglers type gigs over here.
No,
is that right?
That would be Mark Breslin's jonglers. But no, they're not even close to Mark Breslin's.
So the
Breslin's
audience
Yuck Yucks
are going to be full of Mark Breslin's stag dudes,
yeah,
and Mark Breslin's hen dudes.
Mark Breslin's audience. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's... I think we had a pretty savvy crowd at Yuck Yucks. It wasn't your kind of, like you're saying, with stag and hen dudes and stuff like that. It's a bit raucous, but I don't think we had that. We don't have that kind of pack mentality in Canada. It'll be just couples going out, maybe four, you know, two couples or something like that. So we didn't have that and just going into the comedy club and throwing chicken wings at the performer who's been, you know, working on his craft for the last 10 years and goes home and thinks, hey, I'm covered in chicken wing sauce.
Have you had those kind of gigs?
I had chicken wings thrown at me in jonglers, and it's like, oh my goodness, really?
Which one do you remember?
Battersea, I think it was.
That was the toughest one.
Yeah. I had some nice moments there. Sean Mio, one of my favorite moments was Sean Mio. You guys know Sean Mio? Yeah. Just one person. Okay.
We'll edit that.
That's
in.
That's showbiz.
we'll try that again. He's an excellent actor, and you should know.
He's fantastic. And all he does is destroy rooms. That's all Sean Mio does. Even at Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks, they would love him over there. And I went on before him, and it didn't go so well. It was a Christmas do, and it was purpose built for it to be a horrible evening for the comedian and less so for the audience. But anyway, I went on, and Sean Mio saw me as being me and talented or whatever. But anyway, he went on stage after me and scolded the audience for about 3 minutes, which isn't a great thing to do to a drunken British audience who and then tore the roof off the place. But I thought, well done you, Sean. You didn't need to do that. Now I'm forever indebted to that man for that.
So when you're...
You want it serious?
Yeah, I do. This is fascinating. Ladies and gentlemen, are you enjoying this?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Am I? No.
That doesn't matter. We don't care about
enough.
You.
Okay.
So when you are... When you're doing those kind of tougher gigs, have you got what like in that sort of situation? My kind of genre of comedian, I can just go. You know, I'm someone that hosts a lot. I'm comfortable improvising. Mm. If the wheels are falling off, I can kind of go into the audience and rescue myself that way. Do you have kind of rescue strategies? Is that harder for you as a scripted one-liner guy?
Yeah, for reasons described. That's what all I want to do is go up there and do the jokes that I prepared and then move on. I can. I've got the skill set to do that. And I can improvise. I've been improvising here, and I've got, you know, 3 or 4 laughs, less than I'd want. But I can do that. I've got that in my arsenal. Can I say arsenal? But see, I can be nonstop funny, but I prefer not to do that because I don't want to be that comedian. And it sounds like I'm describing you.
No,
I'm not.
Totally fine.
But I want to be scripted. I just gags. Good night. But I can. It's just we're self-indulgent enough as it is to go on stage. The least I can do is be as funny as I possibly can be. I owe that to them.
That's the third time you've said that you owe them something.
Of course we do. How can't we? They've shown up to watch, especially now that I'm on tour. They're coming to see me. So I owe that to them. That's the contract. Be as funny as I can for as long as I can and then get off stage.
But you're aware that a lot of other comics don't necessarily share that approach. You're the only person.
Self-indulgent. Yeah, it's all about them. I care about the audience. There's the difference. See what we've just done there? But the other ones, the comedians, just care about their validation, their level of respect and proving how intelligent they are to the audience.
Does that frustrate
every
you?
One of them. Do you want me to name names?
Yeah, wow. Sure. you can name names and we can edit them out and we can talk
about
the issues surrounding them.
The only name I'm
going to
name is Mark Breslin. That's the only name I'm
Call use Mark Breslin as a pseudonym for someone that you mean, and let's talk about the issues.
No, I'm not going to do that. Of course not. Okay. I'm professional. And I've described myself as being nothing but professional, so I'm not going to do that.
Sure, fine.
But I think we know those type comedians, and they're huge fans of those type comedians. They like that. Comedians will pride themselves going on stage with no material. They've got all kinds of gags, but no, and that's they're doing that for them. They're not doing that for the audience. And the audience, some audiences like that they're creating that magic, that magical moment. No, I go on stage to be funny for, you know, half hour, an hour, whatever I'm on for, and move on.
Do you have, do you know Deliso Chaponda? Have you ever worked with Deliso?
Is it Mark Breslin? No, I don't
he's
know.
He's an actor. He works on the global circuit.
Oh, nice.
And when he's in England, I had him on the show recently. And he has got he used to have a ring binder, and now he's got a thing on his iPad whereby it's a spreadsheet of all of his jokes, the time they take, whether they're blue or not, what audiences they're suitable for. Do you work in that kind of methodical?
Of course not. That's a special human being. Whatever he does, he would be doing that. As a bus driver, he would go home. Oh, that street, I'm not going to, you know, that's the way his brain operates. I couldn't do that to myself. No. I go home, just watch TV and have a cup of tea and a biscuit. That's as rock and roll as I get. Then I'll have heroin. Don't get me wrong.
So the reason I ask is given your work ethic and your commitment and your...
It's limited, by the way. Honestly, this has come so easily. I haven't even tried. And I've found this level of success that I've found. I can only imagine, but I wouldn't want that kind of success. This is me not even trying.
Is that honestly true? That's incredible.
I swear it, yeah. I obviously, I write jokes and I'm motivated to do, you know, to perform in that. But this, I'm not even trying. My wife would, sits around all day, makes me laugh. All I want to do is make my wife laugh. And then when I have to go to a gig, hopefully it'll be 500 my wives, you know, in the audience. And Mark Breslin's wherever I am and just make them laugh.
There's a thing I did a little while ago when I was trying to...
Tell that story.
I was feeling really creatively blocked, and I thought, I imagined someone, this was years, 6 or 7 years ago. My friend Tess is someone who I find that she is easy for me to make laugh. She's a person who I just find that every time I open my mouth, I make her laugh. And so for a while, I just tried to imagine I was just writing for Tess. Do you know what I mean? In such a way that, lovely. Just to try and make myself funny in a more natural way rather than in a head-scratching sort of cerebral way. And it sounds like you almost have something similar. Are you, when you sit around trying to make your wife laugh, are you then going, oh, that's a good idea, that might work as a joke?
No, absolutely not. No, they're two very separate aspects of my brain, my personality. My wife is one of the funniest people I've ever met, so she makes me laugh as much as I make her laugh. And there's no desperation in making her laugh. It's what we do. We make each other laugh. She thinks I'm funnier off stage than on stage, which is probably the greatest compliment anybody could ever give me. And so I take that to heart. So that's.
Is there any possibility of you ever doing the My Wife show where you do the material that you would normally do, that you wouldn't take on stage?
No, that's not. Again, that speaks to that type of personality. You don't know anything about me. At the end of my show, you walk away, hopefully having enjoyed it, but you know nothing about me, and that's how it shall remain. I'm not revealed myself too much now, other than Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks is where I started and where I'm indebted. I truly am indebted to them. If it weren't for Mark Breslin and Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks, I would not be who I am right now.
I'm fascinated by this, Stuart. Hmm? Why are you afraid to give yourself?
I'm not
away?
Afraid. What, of what?
Are you afraid of revealing yourself in some way?
Of course
why don't
not.
You want to give?
I don't
information
want to. I'm a private person. It doesn't matter. And how they don't want to hear it. Well, they might. Want to hear,
these guys
want
to hear
no,
it.
But I don't want to reveal. And I'm not weird. I'm not Johnny Carson, David Letterman weird. And they're proper weird. But anyway, I'm not that. But I it's too self-indulgent to reveal that of me. And I'm not a big fan of that. Like when comedians go on stage and pontificate and tell you, Bill Hicks, highly overrated. That's controversial to say that. You're a comedian. You should revere him. No, highly overrated. And he was just waving his finger and telling us what we should be thinking. Most of it not funny. It's just him just pontificating on stage. And I hate that aspect of comedy. Hate it. I'd shut the audience up.
I like it. This is great.
Thank you.
Thank you. There was a small round of applause, and then I kind of pointed at people for some reason. I'm nervous. I'm enjoying this, but I'm also finding it a sort of an invigorating tussle.
Yes.
Trying to get stuff out of you that you would be happier not sharing.
It's just, I'll do the best I can. Just what next?
Tell me about the moments when you do go, right, I'm going to sit down and write some jokes.
I've only done that 2-3 times. Each time was a really good joke. So that gets back to my personality. Like I don't. Like things will happen during the course of the day. A phrase, one-liners, come up with the punchline, work backwards. We all know that. And some are really good at it, i.e. Milton. No. I.e. me and Milton and all the other ones. But
Who do you think of as all the other ones? Who do you see as your peers?
There's not that many.
That's
great because given my line of work, it's good that I'm one of few. But when I think of the one-liner guys, I think there's Milton Jones, who I love. He's a good friend of mine. And we go out socially quite often and people will see us together and would think that we'd be arch enemies. And we are a bit. But no, we're lovely and our wives love each other.
Do you watch each other's shows?
I wasn't finished with my Milton Jones anecdote. What?
Do you watch each other's shows?
I don't know. I can't speak for him. I don't watch a lot of comedy. I truly don't. Especially when I'm performing that night, I don't watch anybody that's on before me because I don't want to be distracted by I just go on and try to be as funny as I can. Just comes back to be as funny as I can. I don't want to be distracted by the fact that they did such and such a joke that might be similar to that one. And just every joke should win favor with on its merit. So I go up there with that kind of mindset. So, I tend not to watch a lot of comedy.
Okay, so sorry for interrupting you. That's Tell me okay. Who else besides Milton you think of as a peer?
The one-liner guys are Milton, Tim Vine, and Jimmy Carr, and Gary Delaney. That's it.
That's kind of it, isn't it?
I think that's it.
There's a new guy this year called Peter Brush, who I think is doing his first hour, who is a really good one-liner guy. But
he had a brush with death, didn't he?
I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of got the joke, but I also thought he might listen to this, and I didn't want to.
No, he genuinely had a...
No, I don't believe it.
Peter had a brush with... No, because his name... Is it Peter Brush?
Yeah, I believe his name is
And Peter. He's awesome?
Yeah.
Kisser? Is he good?
A great kisser.
Is he really? Oh,
terrific,
nice.
Terrific kisser. Surprisingly generous.
Let's blindfold you. Honestly, get Peter Brush to kiss you, and then Daniel Sloss. And I swear to God, you'll because Daniel wears like a strawberry, like a lip. Like,
well, you've given it away now. There's no. Oh, I'll know it's him.
Oh, yeah. Okay, got you.
Unless we
you're
lip,
good.
We lip up Brush.
And you're good
with
at
a
what
bit
you
of
do. You're fucking hell. You saw right through that. Go ahead. What?
This is genuinely the weirdest episode of this podcast, I think, I've ever done. You mentioned the legacy joke earlier on. You mentioned the swimming out to shore. Do you have what?
Back to shore.
The swimming back to shore. Well, I'm sorry, you didn't tell it.
Yeah.
What do you have other legacy jokes? What do you mean by legacy? You mean something that...
Well, that's the one that oftentimes people will quote, and a lot of people like that joke. One South African comedian in particular liked that joke so much that he used to swim back to shore quite often. And it's like it was new. I was told that, oh, stand-up comedy's new down here. It's because it's, South Africa. So that doesn't forgive there's no excusing that I left there and my joke stayed back. And it's like that's so my joke.
And
he was swimming back to shore.
Yeah, if someone was going to pilfer one of your jokes, you that is a thought, terrible one to...
Yeah, yeah. That's a legacy joke. Not legacy in the grand terms, but in my world, that's one of my hallmark jokes.
Do you... I've had Tim on the show before and Milton as
Who?
Well, and I know...
I've never heard... What do they do?
I know with Tim Vine in particular, he has had... There's like this forever an email circulating, attributing loads of his... Like giving away loads of his best one-liners and often misattributing them.
Mm.
Do you have that problem? Do you have a problem? Because you have such a massive output of one-liners, do you see them go walkabout? Do you?
How would I see that? Because I don't do anything. I don't do social media.
Do people
media.
Draw your attention to it? Do
no,
your friends
no,
in
no.
comedy say... Well,
you're assuming I have friends, but no. But we don't... But no, I don't pay any attention to that. I truly live just a normal life, and I don't... I'm not obsessed with anything. I don't see who's doing what, and I just do my thing, girl.
Okay, so before when you said that you had sat down on three occasions and each time, like to write, and each time you produced a really good joke.
Yeah.
What do you remember? What one of those jokes was? And
I was waiting for my therapist friend. He's not my therapist. Let's put that on the record. But he was late, and that was my my therapist says I have a preoccupation with vengeance. We'll see about that. So yeah, I was genuinely waiting for him to come into my car to go out for lunch, and it's like, therapist.
So that you were waiting for someone in your car, and that counts as one of the three times you sat down to try and come
I'll write
up with
a
jokes.
Joke. Yeah, honestly.
So if I said to you now, you've got to do 5 minutes in a week and of completely brand new stuff,
it would probably be awesome.
I have no doubt that it
that's
would.
That's what you're going for.
That was what I was going for.
Yeah, thank
but,
you.
But secondary to that, what is like, how achievable is that to come up with five? But like, given that you're, as I understand it, writing one-liners it's very kind of time intensive because so many of them don't work. I know. I mean ones that don't make it to the stage. You see
for
what
the
I mean?
Listeners, I'm giving my what the fuck look.
Ones that don't make it to the stage. In my limited understanding,
almost all of them. That's how
really
few jokes I write that they all kind of make it. Because I'll go in there. Now, so I'm not.
So if you had a challenge now, which I'm not going to set you, but hypothetically, if I said come up with 10 original one-liners that work that you've never said or thought of before, how long would that take you?
I don't know. Why would you? But that would be them looking at me sitting here.
No, not now. I mean, like I'm trying to gauge how long it takes you to come up with material.
3 minutes.
10 original jokes that you've never said before.
Not per joke. So what's that? 3 times 10, carry the 4. Not long. But why would I do that when I can go home
and have a cup of tea and a biscuit.
Biscuit and some nice heroin?
Ladies and gentlemen, before we wrap up, we've got about 6 minutes left. And if any of you could fucking get anything out of Stuart Francis, you're more... Please feel free to have a bash. Of the self-indulgent, in inverted commas, acts,
yes.
Who have you seen that you think has merit, that you enjoy despite the self-indulgence?
Two words, and we share his name, Stuart Lee. I think he's phenomenal. I love him. And he's so opposite to my style of comedy. He will tell a joke, then he'll deconstruct it, and then tell it again. And I love it. I adore that man. He's such a funny man.
What is it that you're loving? Is it the kind of...
Because he's so hilarious, and it just his brain is just brilliant. And Bridget, his wife, is lovely, fantastic. But anyway, come back to Stuart. I think it's so opposed to my style of comedy, but I just think he's one of the best comedians ever.
Do you think that might be because, and I know loads of comedians, Stuart Lee's very popular, he's an excellent comic, I think he's fantastic as well. And I want to have him on this show, but I haven't invited him yet because I'm too scared because he's already released several books on how he writes his stuff. So I'm like, what else can I ask him about what he's asked himself? But one of the reasons I like him, and the same of Simon Munnery, is that I think comedians, once you've been doing comedy for a while, you start to anticipate jokes and punchlines. And so it's harder to watch other comedians because you tend to be able to see where things are going. Mm. So one of the reasons I think a lot of comedians love Stuart Lee is because he's operating at such a... with such skill that he's misdirecting even people who are used to doing the misdirecting themselves.
And I'm one of those people. I'm still caught off guard and just love him for that. So, yeah.
Do you, when you're putting new stuff together...
I heard her. No. It's for the listeners. I get it.
When you're putting a new show together, is it one joke out and a new joke in? Or do you... Do you start completely fresh? Do you go, right, this is the new tour, blank page, let's start writing jokes at a rate of 1 per 3 minutes?
Tell her. I just write down a whole bunch of gags, and then they will find their place. That chunk, that will fit in with that chunk. So it's all about chunks. So that leads into that one, leads into that one. And I've written a bunch of new gags that I've inserted into my current tour, Pungent, I think you mentioned it is. And so... That's how I write. I just write as many jokes. So when I've got another, I shouldn't be doing it this way, but I've got a great title for my next tour, and I shouldn't go on tour just because I got a great title, or maybe I should. Mm-hmm. But I, after this tour is over, I'll start to write down. I'll put them all in my book and just write a whole bunch of jokes, and it will all make sense in the end. So that those jokes will. That's family. That's job. That's travel. All that kind of stuff. So it all makes sense.
Like obviously, at the moment you have. Such confidence in your ability to do that because you are, yeah, she's crunching. It's unbelievable. Literally 2 minutes left.
There was no mention that people would be snacking.
Did you have this same amount of confidence in your joke writing ability when you first started? Or is it something that you gradually developed because you were just proving it night after?
Probably had that confidence, but the audiences would prove me wrong. So I stayed true to it because I've always thought I was on to something. I've always thought I had something to offer the world. I thought it was going to be acting because I was raised by television, watched a lot of it. And I do want to come back to acting. I've written a sitcom that's been optioned by a big production company. So I'm very excited about that. But anyway, I always knew I was on to something. So confidence-wise, it was always there, but I might have been overconfident, and that might have been a compensation for insecurity or something. I don't know what was going on there. But as I look back, I've always kind of had the chops. But audiences, I would do the audience. I would be at the Yuck Yucks, Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks in Hamilton, or Mark Breslin's Yuck Yucks in Barrie, or Mark Breslin's Yuck. Yeah, you get the point. But I would do the jokes, and I wouldn't get the laugh. And I would put that joke aside, but knowing that I'm onto something there, I think. And I was, because I would bring those jokes back into it. One of my favorite jokes that I did early in my career was, I was standing in the park today wondering, why does a Frisbee appear larger the closer it gets? And then it hit me. And so I did that early in my career, and it didn't get anything because maybe I didn't sell it. Maybe whatever was going on, maybe it was that particular Mark Breslin's Vancouver Yuck Yucks, it wasn't a great crowd. So I hung on to it, and I did it later, and it became one of my hallmark jokes. You're welcome.
Do you think of yourself as an artist or an entertainer?
Entertainer, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next.
What do you think of me as?
Well, lots of people are different.
A hot entertainer.
then...
You're staring at me. It's
my
eyes,
reduced. I've been reduced to a standstill in a way that I have not for some time.
But artist just sounds a little, as my grandma would say, toffee nose. Like I'm an artist. It's like these actors and actresses that they take their craft, and they call it a craft, for fuck's sakes. But they take it so seriously.
Do you not think it's a... No, do you not think comedy's a craft?
Pretending to be someone else, for fuck's sakes. And they talk about how that character, there was like four layers to that character. You've got one fucking layer and it's boring. So how could your character that you just portrayed on screen have four? And that you're not, you're just pretending to be someone else. You don't have four layers. And you had to be, there had to be angst. And no, just stop talking.
So do you think,
so that's, those are artists. I'm an entertainer. Not after that fucking anecdote, but
do you think you're a craftsman? Do you consider writing jokes to be a craft?
I'm a craftsman. A hot craftsman. We have to agree that I'm hot. We have to.
Final question.
Please say it, Mount.
And then you're free.
Yeah. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Let's do our song. Come on. You said it. Let's do it. We're not.
Final question. And you can interpret this as you like.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you will. What would you have written on your comedy gravestone?
Here lies a truthful man. That got them thinking.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Mr. Stuart Fulton.
I can listen to him all day.
So that was Stuart. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I really did. I'm recording this before I've edited the show, so before Nathan has edited the show, and I've listened back to bits of it. I think I managed to maintain my cheery demeanour, but God, I mean, it was a fight, right? But I think we got somewhere, did we? I got a sense of who Stuart is. I do think it's fascinating, this idea that you either want to need to perform, sorry, you either want to perform or you need to perform, and he's someone that just wants to. But he really seemed like he needed to, right? I mean, I can't be the only person thinking that. So we'll see. Maybe more from Stuart another time. Who knows? Thanks to Stuart for coming on the show. Do download his stuff. You can go and see him on tour. I don't think you can find much of a social media presence for him, as he said there. But you can certainly go and see him live or watch his stuff online and then go and see him live. He's a phenomenal comedian. We're very lucky to have him. Thank you to Nathan for editing the show, Nathan Wood. And also thank you to Ryan Coles, who was this week's Podblin and sorted out the Stuart Francis log for me. And also Ryan, very amusingly, put a little thing at the end of the log which said, brackets, tin rattling, which I assume is the bit that we've cut where I then ask for money from the live guests. Not from the guests. That would be terrible. Come on the show. Now I've interviewed you. Now, Stuart Francis, would you like to donate 5, 10, 20 or £50? So a bit of tin rattling there to see us out. Feel free to donate. And you can set up a recurring donation if you'd like. And I think some of you do like to do that. I'm very grateful to those of you that have so far. You can set up like a pound a week or £2 a week or something like that, or £10 a week and then change it 2 weeks later to £1 a week, having realised your mistake. That's fine too. Thanks for listening. I'll speak to you very soon. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.